listening to Omnis Protocol. I am Charles, also known as Omnis, and I'm here with Jamie, a.k.a. The Seraphim. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, hey, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm super excited for this episode that we're going to do today.
Yeah, another one of Charles' special. I'm going to message you a couple days before the episode and throw a topic in you, and let's see what happens.
Which yeah, you I actually like love it happens this. Any other way.
I love it, honestly. I really do.
Yeah, let's do this thing. So, all right, listeners. So I've dragged Jamie back onto the show, again, kicking and screaming. And honestly, I'm going to give a shout out to Jacob, a.k.a. Xavier Protocol, since the idea for this show is actually his. And he was kind of like, well, why haven't you done this with everyone doing character tier lists? And Jacob had suggested that we do tactics card tier list. And at first, I wasn't quite sure about it. And the more that I thought about it, I was like, no, we're definitely going to do this. And I've been trying to get Jamie back on. And so we're going to have to break this up into two episodes, because honestly, Jamie, I don't think you and I could manage to talk so little to squeeze this into 1 hour.
No, we would have to speed up and talk like auctioneers. And I don't think anyone really wants to hear that.
Yeah, I think it'd be too fast. So this is going to be two episodes. We haven't figured out exactly which card we're going to pause on, but we're going to do these in alphabetical order. And so here's kind of the rough idea of what we had in mind. So we're going to do kind of a letter grade system. We're adding an S tier at the top. This is kind of a superior tier. It's referenced in a lot of war games. This is really stuff that's like on the absolute top of the curve. And I'm going to go so far as to say things on the S tier might actually be too good. And I would say are things that might need to have some sort of slight adjustment. And if that ever came around where there was a point where cards were being looked at and reviewed, A tier is just going to be your fantastic, like probably getting included a lot of the time when you can. And B tier is kind of your solid choice stuff. But it's, I want to say something like when you can run it, you're still probably seeing it 75% or less of the time. Even when it's something that fits naturally with what you're doing. And then C tier is going to be your either just mediocre stuff or the stuff that's just a little too situationally good or maybe just a little hard to pull off consistently, but still has value. And so that's kind of our middle of the road spot. And then the D tier stuff is going to be stuff that most of the time you can probably ignore, but there might be corner case situations where that card still has the right fit. And then we've got an F tier, an actively bad. And I wasn't even sure if we were going to need it at first, but truth be told, I do think there is some cards that I'm kind of like, this should be better. But
oh, yeah. Yeah.
But sometimes you gotta have the bad stuff to make the good stuff shine.
Exactly. And, you know, it everything's gonna be a bell curve. You're gonna have ones to stand out that are exceptionally good, ones that stand out that are objectively bad. And both of these categories, the S and the F, are, in my opinion, ones cards that I feel, if there were to be an errata and the cards were to be looked at, these are the ones that should be focused on and brought more into the middle.
I think that's fair. And I don't have a problem with there being a lot of like A-tier stuff and even some stuff in the D-tier where is that situational. It's fine for things to exist there. It is possible that, like you just said, the S and the F-tier might be the ones that could come up a notch or come down a notch just to like keep things as interesting as possible. But man, it's already hard picking tactics cards. Narrowing it down to 8 or 5 is so hard.
I mean, what? We've got 47. So to begin with, you got to cut away 80% of those cards to get you down to 8. And then of that, you got to cut away 3 cards to get you down to the 5. I think tactics card is like one of the hardest challenges of creating your roster.
Absolutely. And it can be one of the most rewarding to like have it really thought out and have that important tactics cards in there that define the game. So it really is a monumental part of the roster. But I don't know, any thoughts that you have before we dive into our first card?
Everything that we say is obviously our opinion, but also, if you really don't care, just play Guardians, because every card is a great card.
True enough. I also think, obviously, the stuff is going to change. I think there are going to be cards that we mention as being really great right now that could be replaced, or certain characters may become really popular that counter a particular card, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. There's actually going to be a few examples, and I get to one of my first S-tier cards. I'm going to be talking about ways that maybe that card doesn't need to get eroded, but if certain abilities were introduced to the game that could be affecting that, that's absolutely a consideration. So if you're listening to this a year from now, this tier list may be completely useless.
Yeah. You know, the other thing is, like, our C's, D's, and F's might change due to a new character coming out and that card just comboing fantastically with that character.
Yeah, I definitely have a few cards that, as we go through them, I'm going to say, I think this one has the potential to move up because of future releases. But
Right.
We'll get into all that. So, Jamie, why don't you start us off? We're going to go alphabetically. So why don't you give us our first card, our first spicy hot take?
Alphabetically, Aim Lackeys, which is one of the cards that comes with MODOK, spicy hot take, right in the middle. I have it as a C, mediocre, situational. Yes, additional movement is great. There's action economy. You have to think about what's going on. However, MODOK has to be on the table. MODOK has to spend the power, and I know you MODOK players, you would rather spend the power on throwing stuff around or, you know, whirling chairing as many people as possible. And the thing that actually makes it the C tier for me is it's an additional movement action during their activation. So there's always a chance that that character gets dazed before you get to use it. And at that point, you've just wasted a taxes card, basically.
That is all true. And I will say, if we had recorded this podcast a month ago, I probably would have given it the same rating. But it's time to Hot Pocket. Hot Pocket! I'm giving Aim Lackeys an A.
What?
Not a B. I'm giving it an A. This is a card that I think that I undervalued too much in my early gaming. So here's the thing. There's no range restriction on this card. MODOK can apply it to anyone, anywhere on the board. That's huge. One of the dominating Cabal lists would be something like Red Skull, MODOK, Ultron, Venom, and then you've got a little play there. But there are some really crazy things you can do. Like, say, if you're using drop-off with Ultron on Venom, you can have it set up so Ultron gets to do a move action with drop-off and then still gets to make two attacks and gets the Venom drop-off attack during it. And I just think it's something that is a lot more powerful than it's been given credit for in a lot of situations. And I think it can be an absolutely game-winning card, and I'm seeing it more and more commonly with these MODOK Cabal teams that are kind of making, I don't think comeback is necessarily the right word, because it's not like MODOK has ever not been popular, but right, I think as... Right. Now that we're in this quarantine time period and we're getting more time to like focus on specific teams and like really think things out with all of the different characters available, I think we are starting to see some of the outliers and some of the strongest teams. And I think MODOK Cabal is still one of those. And yep. I think Aim Lackeys yep. is absolutely a very, very strong part of that. Now, probably not necessarily in every list. And I think there's going to be teams that don't use it, but I think this is one, if you have not been considering it, I think you need to come back and try it, because it works great with Killmonger, works great with Venom, works great with Ultron. Like, there's so many little situations that you can use this, and you can also use it as a get out, like a hit and run card, where you can have a character move up, like take multiple attacks and then move at the end to like get back to a safe spot or something like that. I don't know. I think this card is really good, and with no restriction to which team, like there's no affiliation part of this.
Yeah.
It is really good.
Yeah.
Now there are times you'd want tactical analysis instead, but I'm going Hot Pocket. Aim Lackeys is my A.
Okay. You make some very good points. So that's definitely something that I'll think about. And I guess we might have to revisit this in the future and see how our tiers have changed.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad we started off pretty crazy right away.
Yeah. So
let's dance into advanced R&D. My take this time is not quite as spicy. I think this card is a B. It's always one that I consider for my eight and often consider for my five, but it's usually just outside of my preferred cut. But there are a lot of really cool first turn plays, and there's a lot of situations all throughout a game where a character just needs one more power. And so I really like this card. I wish that I was playing it more often, but in my heart, I feel like it is a solid B. What do you think, Jamie?
For me, this one is like a very solid A for me. I think this is an absolutely fantastic card. I've talked before about the various economies, and being able to micromanage your power economy on your squad to this level is exceptional. As you just said, you know, there are situations you get first, you get turn one plays, you get middle of the game plays, you get end of the game plays, that Avanza R&D helps you open up because it lets you take one character that has a ton of power that's not really spending it, and you can spread that out so that your other squad members of the squad can start doing some stuff going.
I agree. I think, especially if you're playing a team that doesn't have very many like character-specific cards, like say you were playing Asgard or something, and you really just have Odin's Blessing, and you're not running anything else that's character-specific, I think this would be a very easy card for you to fit in. Honestly, I wouldn't even say that A is a spicy take in this case. I think that's totally reasonable.
I think it also falls into a little bit of our playstyles, because I'm a little bit more of an aggressive player than you, so having that extra power is something that I'm looking for, because I'm wanting to do those additional aggressive moves.
Well, that may be true, but I've also been doing my current roster is very aggressive. Not necessarily in a Jamie aggressive way, but I have some new very aggressive game plans. We'll talk about that more.
Okay.
But let's hop into the next card. So
next one is the Hulk card, Anger Management. This one is my first F. I hate this card. I do not like it whatsoever. It's, you gotta have Hulk. It's an Avengers-only card. The Avenger has to play it, and you're spending power to put damage onto Hulk. Yeah, it gives him additional power, but you have Avanza R&D. Hulk doesn't have an injured side. So if I'm putting Hulk on the table, I don't want to make it easier for my opponent to remove my Hulk. So this was my first F.
Honestly, I'm right there with you. This is my first F as well. There is just too many restrictions. Like, Avengers affiliated can only be played by an Avenger. Mm-hmm. And it's an expensive card. I think at the very least, I think this card could be more interesting if it was just simply like maybe two power, right? Just like a two power card, and you can deal up to five damage to Hulk and he gains that much power. Something like that, that would make it a little bit more cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
I think would make this a little bit spicier, and still may not see a lot of play, but I think a change like that could bring this one back into focus. But as much as I've looked at it, this is like the worst affiliated card in the game.
I think I have that in my notes as well. Yeah,
it's a rough one to look at, and you're like, man, so many restrictions. Like, right? Like, it's so restricted, it's almost unplayable. And I'm like looking at it, I'm like, oh, it range three. That's a reasonable restriction. That doesn't fit in with the rest of this card.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I don't think we have to, like, sit around on this one that much longer. It's not good. Maybe you could talk me up to a D, maybe, but probably not.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Now, listeners, if you have a great anger management play, I would love to hear about it, though.
Yes, please.
All right, well, please. So next one's me, then. Avengers Assemble, another Avengers A card. I've got this one at a solid A. I will say I have debated it at a B, because this is one that I don't necessarily think fits into every Avengers list. Now, probably in every Avengers roster, but maybe not every Avengers team, but it is still really good. And one cost for a bunch of different movement. It's one that feels really good. I've never had it feel like S tier amazing in a game. Like, it's definitely like changed a game where it's like, okay, you threw this character off a point, but I'm going to play Avengers Assemble, get them back onto the point, and that keeps me from losing or changes who wins, which is obviously very good. But I've had a lot of situations where it's like, oh, I need them to move and do X, and they can't use this card and do that, and it doesn't always work out as amazingly. And I think there are other affiliations that maybe it would be too good in, but either way, I think it is a solid middle of the road A, and I like it. I wouldn't really change anything about it.
Yep, completely agree with you there. I have this as an A as well, for all of the exact same points that you have mentioned.
All right, well, let's go on to the next one. What are we doing?
Next one is Battle Lust. I think this one might be a little bit of a sleeper card. I still have it as a C, but I think this one, for majority of the characters out there, C, very situational. I don't see ways and scenarios in which you'll want to use it. However, if the character has a charge superpower, this card now becomes way more interesting, because now you're getting the charge off with the additional dice on the attack, and you're able to make a second attack following up. Like, I think Battle Lust on characters with charge makes it a much, much better card, which is definitely a C. It's a situational card.
I agree with most of what you said there. I bumped this one to a B, though. I think it is an interesting control card, and I'm going to give out a shout out to a specific situation. I think this is potentially very good with Rocket, where he's only size one, and he may need to move to a point and then take a range 5 shot. So for him, this is one power to gain one additional die of damage and push the character away. And that in itself could change a game, right? Yeah. Like, basically he's Shuri for one shot, right? And that's pretty good in itself. It's not that expensive, but it also, Valkyrie's becoming one of the best characters in the game. Not becoming, I think we're realizing that she might be the best character in the game. And as you said, she can charge, and where now you could have a character that could charge onto a point, like say in Gamma Wave, she charges to like the enemy's point and then uses Battle Lust as part of her charge. So she's got a 7 dice hit that she could even Warrior of Legend on potentially to then like get more power. And that kind of sets up the reliability of getting that damage in. And then, boom, she does a bunch of damage, pushes someone away that if she doesn't KO them, and she gets power out of it, and then can throw someone else. So she can move two people off a point. I think this could be an absolutely game-defining card. It does take a little bit more to set up, which is why I don't think it pushes itself to an A. But I agree with you when you said, I think this is a sleeper card. And I think this is one that, if we were to suddenly have a bunch of tournaments, I think you would see this in some very key teams, and I think it could be a game-winning card for them.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so not anything super spicy there.
No.
Brace for Impact is next. I'm giving it a solid A, but there was a point where I was actually considering dropping it down to a B. I think this is a card where everyone plays it. It only costs one power. But I'm noticing more and more that I'm not seeing terrain thrown at characters as often. Like, MODOK still does it, but I think a lot of people are realizing you're often throwing characters to get them off of the crisis or get them out of position, and not throwing terrain at people quite as often. It's become one that I think is eventually going to be seeing less play, but right now it's still a solid A. And I think for a lot of teams where you're going to struggle to spend the power to get through a ton of different cards, it only costs one. So it fits in nice and easy. So it's still just a solid, good choice. And I think we're still going to see it a lot for a long time, but I think a year from now, I'm going to predict that we're going to see this in a lot less teams.
Yeah, for the same reasons and points that you made, I rated this as a B. I mean, it's a solid choice to have in, but you're not seeing throws being used as attacks to put damage on characters. You're using throws as scenario plays to, as you said, move characters off points and to get that done. So having a character that's thrown and you brace for impact where basically you're paying one power to not take one damage, if that was a superpower, absolutely would do that all day. I mean, Crossbones has it. So can be good, but honestly, if I'm picking my five, I'm generally, and even my eight, I'm really not looking at brace.
I think in general, this is one where I may be trying to play more teams without brace and seeing how I feel about it. Mm-hmm. Because I have been feeling like there's a lot of key tactics cards that I'm wanting to fit in, and maybe brace is where I need to be cutting to make that happen. But who knows? Maybe I'll be totally wrong. It'll be something that we never get rid of, and it's always there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Brace for the impact on the game.
Yeah. So the next one, as we're going down the list, is Cosmic Invigoration, the Cabal card. This one, because I love me my Cabal, definite 100%. I think this is an absolutely fantastic card. Being able to reactivate a character lets you mess with priority, gets you a whole second slew of actions that you can then take. The range 2 from Red Skull is a big limiter, 100%, which is why this is not an S. But absolutely fantastic card. And if you're on the MODOK missile plan, then, you know, your entire game plan is centered around this card.
So I think I agree in spirit. I decided to put this one at a B because it still has situations where basically if you're not playing MODOK, the value of this card goes down significantly. So yes, it's kind of a affiliated card, but also kind of a character affiliated card at the moment as well. And so with both of those things combined, there's going to be a point where there's going to be more Cabal teams that are not focused on MODOK. And I think right now, probably the most powerful ones are. And maybe you could see teams where you're like kind of doing a vision thing with him and like taking advantage of the beams and that sort of thing could still be very valuable in that spot. And maybe it worked pretty well there. But I think outside of that, it's really hard to pull off with Killmonger. It's really hard to pull off with non-ranged characters because it's just kind of hard. Like, it just functions right with MODOK, right? He's got 10 health on his front side, so he can usually survive the cosmic damage. And it's just, it's rough for, like, every other character. And this one is a really good card with kind of the appropriate amount of penalties, where it's got some range restrictions. You know, you've got to be reasonably close to Red Skull. Only Red Skull can be the one who, you know, spends the power for it. It's really good, but I couldn't quite put it as an A, because even when I'm talking to other Cabal players, there's some Cabal players that just don't really use it. And they're focused more on Dark Reign than on Cosmic Invigoration and then other key cards. And so if the Cabal community split on it, I don't think I can give it an A.
Fair.
So Crew of the Milano is next. And so I think this one's me. I, as much as I like Guardians, I'm giving this card an overall C. I think Guardians will often take it because when it's good, it's going to be great. And because of the natural combination with Star-Lord's leadership, you can always use this card you just use his leadership instead. And that's totally fine, because if you're not playing against someone with these key status effects, but Thor is getting more popular. There's a lot more stun going around. Like there are it is only going to become more common that we're going to see it. But right now I think the Crew of the Milano card is kind of mediocre. And if you were to play 100 games with Guardians of the Galaxy, I think you're going to use this card for Star-Lord's leadership more than 50% of the time. And so that's where I'm like, I'm giving it kind of a middle of the road spot at C. What do you think?
I have this as an A. So this is my
hot pocket. Damn, hot pocket.
Well, we're seeing more status effects come out now. You know, there are more attacks with status effects attached to them. So being able to remove status effects and being able to become immune to status effects, I think is going to become way more of a, you know, card that you're going to take and you're going to look at, because, you know, stun, stagger, everyone knows just how much of a pain it is to deal with that when you have one of those on your characters. And if I said to you, hey, just spend one power, go ahead and get rid of that stun, would you say no? No, you will jump at that chance immediately. And then on top of that, that character can't get stunned again. So, yeah, 100, I'm definitely putting this one as an A. Like, I think this is an absolutely fantastic card. I honestly don't see myself, whenever I play Guardians, I don't see myself never not taking this card. Like, I'm always going to bring this in my five.
I think that's an absolutely fair plan. I mean, unless you were literally looking down at your opponent's full roster and being like, man, they have so little status effects on here, I can probably squeeze in something a touch spicier. But otherwise, I think I agree. I could see this still making your five a lot. I went with the C, obviously, because I just don't think it's going to get played nearly as often it gets taken. But that's fine for Guardians. I think it was okay to do something a little bit more matchup specific for Guardians because of the nature of Star-Lord's leadership. And
right,
we're probably super far out from ever seeing a Guardians of the Galaxy leader that's not Star-Lord.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
back to me on the next one, and surprise, surprise, your Cabal-loving friend over here is back to another Cabal card with Dark Reign. Absolutely amazing. Solid A across the board. There's no range limitation. It's Cabal only? Sure. A Cabal character has to spend the power. Okay. Cabal characters are the ones that are going to be benefiting from this. All right, Cabal has a bunch of really beefy hitters. I'm liking all of that. The main thing that for this, for me, even with all of those, rerolls. Oh my god, rerolls. Getting rid of dice variance in this game, which is so high, is such a major thing.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. I went with a B because, again, I think there are a fair amount of Cabal teams that are going to focus pretty heavily on non-Cabal characters. You may even see some where Red Skull and MODOK are the only Cabal characters in there, and you have like Winter Soldier, Rocket, and Thor or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's not quite consistent enough for me. I think when you're playing a very Cabal-focused team, it's going to be very, very good. And that may even require another Cabal or two characters to hit. It can definitely help Killmonger. So when you're playing a sort of team that is like all Cabal, this card is so pure money and is definitely an A. But I feel like too much of the time, it's hard to play a team that is like really like a vast majority of them are in affiliation. So with that in mind, I stuck it at a B. Still very good, but it doesn't quite make the A level for me.
Okay, I can see that. But, I mean, even if you're just running just Red Skull and MODOK, Red Skull cubing for the three power to then play Dark Reign, which then lets, you know, MODOK do his thing against that one guy that you really don't want to be there.
But there are a lot of other cards that are going to compete for that spot. Like, mm-hmm. And it's getting harder and harder. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great things to fit in there, and I think... I mean, we're going to get to some of those other cards as we go down this list, and there's a lot of powerful cards for Red Skull and MODOK to be playing, and so makes it difficult. It's not necessarily that there's anything wrong with Dark Reign. I think it's just there's a lot of competition for that spot, and I think there are going to be a reasonable amount of times where you've got to make that hard cut, and Dark Reign's not going to make it all the time.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
All right, next card. This is one that I think a lot of listeners may not have seen. It did start popping up. I forget where AMG posted it, but Daughters of Thanos, This comes in the Gamora and Nebula pack. So I'm going to review this one just a little bit more than we do the other ones, because I think there's going to be a fair amount of listeners that may not have actually looked at it. It is an unaffiliated card. When either an allied Gamora or an allied Nebula makes an attack action, after the attack is resolved, both characters may spend 2 power each to play this card. The character, Gamora or Nebula, that did not make the initial attack may make an attack targeting the same character. There's a lot of restrictions in here. I like that it's at least unaffiliated. Yes. But basically, it's a card to generate 1 attack. It does not have to be a 0 cost attack, so that's a benefit. But 2 power each for 1 attack. So on average, we're still probably talking about a situation where you're maybe getting 1 or 2 damage on something for this card that's going to cost 4 power and requires you to have both Nebula and Gamora in a position where they're attacking the same character.
Mm-hmm.
I went with a D on this one. I really don't see me playing this. It just seems like it's going to be too difficult to set up. And Nebula's already kind of a very niche character to begin with. And so to, first of all, to go, I have a team that's going to have both Gamora and Nebula. That's probably not happening that often anyway. And to be that they have to both be on the same side of the table going after the same target, that's not super likely.
It's a rough card to set up for sure.
Cool thing about it is because Nebula can't pick up an extract that someone drops, I could see you moving her up on a character, getting some damage in, and then when Gamora goes in to try to help finish them off, you could play this card so you get this nice consistent attack out of Nebula, and they probably don't want to attack her because she can't, you know, she doesn't contest that sort of thing. So she may stick around. And then a really consistent attack might facilitate finishing someone off, and then Gamora can pick up that extract because it's still her activation. So, you know, there's still maybe some spots to play it, and that's why this one didn't fall down to an F to me, because I think there could be key teams where this does fit into your plan, but I just don't think that's going to be very common.
100% agree.
Did you have it as a D as well?
I had it as a D as well. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think it's... And it's okay. Not all cards have to be A's.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we don't have to dilly-dally on that one for too long. Daughters of Thanos. Interesting to look at. Probably not a first choice.
Next one is going to be Deadly Duo. This is the Rocket and Groot card. This is the one that lets Rocket attack 3 times. Sounds amazing, right? Right? Wrong. It's a C. The reason it's a C is because your 3 attacks have to target 3 different people. Okay, yeah, Rocket, range 5. Cool, you're probably going to have a bunch of people in range, but terrain's probably going to get in the way. You're being able to line up 3 shots on 3 characters in a row, that's going to take some maneuvering. That's 100% what I will call a situational card. Like, the situation has to be correct for this to happen.
Well, I agree with everything you said. I have it up 1 slot into the B range, because even by comparison to Daughters of Thanos, we're still talking about the same cost, it is a whole lot easier to pull off. They don't have to be making an attack on the same character. It's going to be pretty natural if you're playing both Rocket and Groot that they probably on turn 1 hang out together. And then they probably split off both ways. But it is pretty common that Rocket may be an early activation, and it's going to be reasonably common that both Groot and Rocket could be on 2 power at the start of turn 2. And then you start off Rocket's activation by being like, boom, I'm going to take 3 attacks, build up some power, then drop a Hadron Enforcer on someone. Even if you're not getting 3 attacks out of this card and you're only getting 2, I still think that's a reasonable B quality card. Like, 1 card, 4 power, 2 attacks that then generates power for Rocket. I like it. Again, it's not an A. It's not going to be something, because you still have to obviously play both characters, but Yeah. I like this one as a duo card. I think this is a kind of nice in that realm of, if you're playing both characters, it's a cool thing to keep in mind and have as an option, but it's not so good that you feel trapped into like making that happen. And they're both guardians, so this is a card that you can take and let it be situational, and if it doesn't come up, boom, it's Star-Lord's leadership. So
yeah, just toss a card. Yeah, that's the thing that I'm finding with a lot of these team-up cards, these duo cards. I find them too situational, and we'll get into this with some of the other cards. It's just getting that situation to happen to warrant the use of the card is going to happen so infrequently. And if your opponent knows that your opponent knows you have Deadly Duo, you know, the assumption is turn two, it might go off. So I'm going to give you one character. So now you're going to pay full power for one attack. And it just seems terrible at that point.
Well, I wouldn't say that that's terrible. It's at least reasonable to set up and like take a free attack that, you know, to a certain extent will probably pay for itself. But there's a lot of setups now where you have, say, something like Serum and Hammers or Serum and Evac, where you end up with characters fighting in these two basically hallways on the table, and you're gonna have two characters at least opposing on each side. It's just not feasible for there only to be one. So I think it's hard to set up where you're not gonna end up getting two attacks out of this. Again, it's not, I think it's something that has to fit into your specific plan and your specific team, and I think it is good in those situations, but B or C I think either are a very reasonable answer for this one. All right, so Disarm, I like. Overall, I'm giving this one a B. So when I look at this one, the only reason why it's not an A for me is because you really have to have priority for this one to be doing it, to be most effective. When you can do something where you start off turn two or turn three and you daze a character and then disarm a other key character, that's really significant. And this only costs one power each. They both only have to be within range three. And so I think there's a lot of fair situations considering you can activate a character, get them also within range three, or just need them to finish up their activation within range three. And having an enemy character roll two fewer dice is pretty significant. Unless you're doing it to someone like Valkyrie, who may just want to throw your ass anyway. but outside of those situations, there's a lot of characters that absolutely do not want this played on them. This cuts down their energy, their power generation. And I think a lot of people have shied away from playing it, but I think it's really solid. So it went in as a B for me.
From what I've been seeing recently is there's like a upcoming shift where people are attacking less. They're not just throwing out attacks to throw out attacks. Now they're strategically placing attacks in order to win on the scenario. The attacks now become scenario plays. So when you know that a strategic attack has to happen, knocking two dice off that attack makes it less that is going to happen. For me, that was my reasoning for rating it a B. But same as you, it's a lot easier to pull off. It's a lot lower in cost. Your characters don't have to invest as much. You can really annoy a Killmonger player by playing this on Killmonger when you think he's about to go for a SERP. So, like, it gives you a lot of very interesting counterplay in that with this card. And my specific note is I think this one is going to grow in value.
Absolutely agreed. What was your rating on this one? I don't think you said.
B. I rated this to B as well. Yeah, this is a very, very solid B card.
And I think there's more and more aggressive plays that this could, where basically you make a sort of play and you go after an extract on your opponent's side of the board. And then anything that you can do to make it hard for them to deal with that character over there, I think is absolutely advantageous. So it's interesting how defensive cards help facilitate aggressive moves and offensive cards help facilitate defensive moves. And so it's a very interesting dynamic that doesn't exist in a lot of other games. So I agree. Perfect, obviously. Solid B.
Next is Doomed Prophecy. This is the one that came in the 4-pack, I believe.
Yep.
All right. Doomed Prophecy. I'm reading this one as C. I don't like the negative. I think, while I 100% understand the negative, I think it's thematic as fuck. I love that this is a negative. As a gamer, I hate it. I do not want to lose my physical defense for the rest of the game. That hurts me. That hurts me so much. Getting 3 to 4 additional dice on my attacks this round versus everyone with physical attacks basically just getting free pot shots against that one character for the rest of the game is too much for me. I don't like it.
I feel you there. It's an interesting card. I also rated it as a C. I considered both B and D for this card. The main reason why I ended up settling on the C is because there is a point in a lot of games where you will have a moment where you're either to stay in this game, I have to daze X characters so they drop said extraction or they don't contest this point. And this is one of the most powerful cards to facilitate that situation.
Yes.
And yes, from that perspective, I like it. The problem is, it really only synergizes particularly well with certain characters. It synergizes better with the ones that have a way to kind of tilt those odds. So adding 3 or 4 dice is really like adding a lot more. Say, like on Loki, when his strike is going up to 8 dice and he's spending for I Am a God, so he's counting blanks, then that 8 dice strike is pretty ridiculous. And so I think there are situations like that where it just overall boosts in value. I think you'd say the same thing about Valkyrie, Thor, you know, because he could do something at range. That there are some situations where this is a great card, but because it's still a little too situational for my taste, and I think a lot of the characters who synergize with this the best also kind of don't want to be making attacks as often as you'd think. Loki, Thor, Valkyrie, like, they're all very great control characters, so I can see if it fits your plan and helps you counter some of those control strategies to, like, help with that key moment where you need to daze a character and it can fit in. So I think C is totally reasonable.
Yep.
All right. So let's see. That one was yours. So I get drop off.
You get drop off.
Oh, I didn't realize I was going to get drop off. Drop off is my first S tier card. Right? We haven't done an S yet. I don't think so. Yeah. It's my first S tier card. I think drop off is potentially the best card in the game. It is becoming very, very difficult for me to build rosters without it. And if I build a roster and I'm looking at, I feel light on flyers, so I can't really justify drop off, it brings a lot of things into question. Now, when you're just looking at the core set, drop-off does not seem that strong, because you're like, Ultron is probably the best character to use it, but he doesn't have a great drop-off target.
Yeah,
and Iron Man and Captain Marvel don't really like spending their power on other things. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't quite fit. But then as soon as you get, like, Ultron dropping off Venom and Thor and Vision come out that can do really cool drop-off plays on other characters, suddenly this card is ridiculously good. And there is a huge part of my current strategies that are all based around utilizing this card and planning to deal with it.
Yep.
Giving a character, you know, more than their normal speed of movement for one power each and getting an extra attack out of it potentially, that's really, really good. This card should probably cost more. And if we just hit like Daughters of Thanos and Deadly Duo, and these are more restricted and cost 2 each, it probably would not have been too much for drop off to cost 2 each.
Yeah, because then it doesn't become, it's not turn 1 plays unless you're Asgardian. Now it's a turn 2 strategy.
And it's, I think, have like Thor at 4 Asgard and drop off, right?
Right, yeah. So I think a lot of it right now is, I rate this an S as well.
Because you're a smart
If
man.
I do recall, huh? Yeah, I mean, if I do recall, there's an entire episode dedicated to drop-off and how good drop-off is.
You're not wrong. And it's only getting better. It has gotten better since that episode.
Yeah, it does. As more people come out, this card gets better and better and better and better. And if I had to, just like you, if I had to say, hey, if I was going to errata this card, this is what I would do. What I would do is make it cost two instead of one.
Yeah, it's something. I mean, I can see probably in the moment when they're just looking at the core set, it probably seemed like it was fine at that moment. Uh-huh. But the new releases have probably made it too good. And it's going to become a staple of competitive play for as long as it remains at its current cost. So,
yes. Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. S tier all day long. If you have a problem, you can email Omnus. I don't have an email address.
OmnusProtocol@gmail.com. Send your complaints. I file them in the trash bin.
So right, the next one off the drop-off, and honestly, if you want to hear more about drop-off, check out the drop-off episode. It is 45 minutes of talking about how great drop-off is. After that, we have Escort to Safety. Literally, my notes are, eh. I have this to see. I think this card would be fantastic if there was a targeting redirect. The fact that there isn't a targeting redirect makes it really hard for you to successfully pull off, because the amount of times I'm able to make a short move and successfully get that character out of line of sight or range is rare, is very, very rare. So you're going to bring it and you're going to wait for that one situation where it'll win you the game, and that situation might pop up one in every 15, every 20 games, something like that. So that's why, for me, this is 100% just a C, absolutely situational. I'm really not going to take it because I think there are better cards that do something similar.
You know, you said C, but if you hadn't given a letter grade and I just listened to what you said, I would have thought you were giving it a D. Like,
oh.
I have it as a C, but I feel like it's way better than what you described it as. My only complaint about this card, I like it. I think it doesn't get the credit it deserves. I wish it cost two. I think three power is just a slightly rough for this specific card. I like it. I will still have teams that will use it. I think C is the right spot. I think Jamie kind of talked like he was giving it a D, even though he said C. And so I'm just like, it's a little better, in my opinion, than what you described it as. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes now. I do have a C, and then I'm reading my notes. I'm like, yeah, no, that does sound like a D. So yeah. I'm changing my C to a D.
Ah, damn it.
I'm going down a grade.
Get my mouth shut.
I reread my notes. I'm going down a grade. It's a D. You can ignore it.
All right, well, let's move on. Field dressing. I like this one. I'm giving it a B. It is still slightly situational because a lot of the time you want to be able to play it and immediately activate that character who's now at one health, basically, one stamina. And that's just not always possible. This does cost four. But when you can do that, you can turn around a game with that sort of play. Because people start making decisions based around that character being dazed. I like it. I think it's solid. I think you should absolutely be considering it and thinking about it in your tactics, but not quite good enough for an A just because of the positioning factor. What do you think?
I have this one as a C because of the positioning factor. Range 2 is very, very tight. In my opinion,
this is Cabal manipulation on your part. Like, this card is specifically for playing against Cabal. I feel like you're coming out and you're like, guys, this card's not very good. Don't undaze your character that MODOK just wrecked. Okay? Don't take it. It's pretty middle of the road. And I think if you tried to say D, most of the listeners would have been like, Jamie, I feel like you're pulling one over on me. But you went for the C, but I'm still calling you on this.
No, I'm... What? Hey, you're not supposed to relay my secret plots and plans to other people. I thought we had an agreement. But seriously, though, like, for me, I put this as a C 100% because of the range, too. You know, in situations like Gamma Shelters or the various other missions where you have, where you do have clumps fighting together, yes, this is probably going to be great and will probably swing you the game. But for the rest of the missions where, you know, you're a lot more spread out, having characters within range two of one another at the right time to use this so that the character you undaze doesn't immediately get redazed. Like, again, it's one of those, the stars have to align, you know, a full moon and solar eclipse have to happen exactly the same time.
Hashtag cabal manipulation. There has to be a full moon for you to pull this off. Even if you're putting it in your roster and be like, oh man, as soon as they daze MODOK, I'm just going to undaze him. Like,
oh, yeah, but right. Then you just turn around and redaze MODOK.
Well, not if you patch him. Anyway, I think it is a very interesting card, and I think this is going to be a hard one to predict just how much impact it's going to have. It both kind of feels really, really good, but also is slightly difficult to pull off. And so, I mean, that's why I settled in on the B. Why don't you tackle Follow Me?
Follow Me? Holy crap, this card is expensive. Wow.
As it should be.
6 power. Damn. I have this one as a C as well. I think you're going to find situations where Follow Me is amazing. And the rest of the time, it's just kind of sit there. Having a character that just activated with 6 remaining power, I mean, range 3 is pretty good. So the range really isn't a problem. It's the having an active character with 6 power that you want to spend the 6 power on Follow Me and not 6 power on a throw, a push, an attack that has a, you know, some sort of status effect trigger on there, or an attack that throws. Like, when you're looking at 6 power on your character card, you're not going, man, I really want to use Follow Me. You're going, all right, I have this option, this option, this option, or this option.
Okay, so here I feel like we're in the opposite situation. I think you as a Cabal player need to play this card more often, because I think this is a defining card to the Cabal metagame at this point. I think it is almost absolutely key. If you want to play a Cabal team that is going to daze characters, I think you have to run not have to, but I think you should be strongly considering running it so you can control priority. And yes, it's expensive, but that 6 power could facilitate you being able to have priority the next turn and do the same shit again.
Okay.
I'm only a B because it's still, in a lot of ways, this is like a MODOK affiliated card. Like, MODOK's the guy who pulls this off, right? Like, right. Maybe Rocket can play it, right? Like, after a deadly duo where he just generates like a million power in, or something. And not that you're going to play Groot in Cabal, but maybe Rocket pulls this off and he sets up a Follow Me because he could just take a bunch of plasma rifle shots. It is a really good card. And I think when you're going to try to play that dazing team, I would be considering this.
Okay.
Just for controlling priority. And like, even if it's just activating Red Skull and letting him like move MODOK back or something, or being like, I needed to daze this character right away and I could not let Thor activate, being able to just go, okay, I did my 2 attacks, now I'm gonna let this character go and he's gonna finish it off, that helps too, and that still helps you keep that priority situation under control. So I think you should try it. All right. I think when you start playing your games, I think you should give it another go.
I will add that to the list of items that I need to try. And I'll devote a couple games. I'll do some serious testing on this one.
Okay.
And then I'll come back and I'll let you know.
Sounds good. All right, so Gamma Launch is next, right? That's where we're at. I'm putting Gamma Launch at S tier. I think this card is actively the reason why Hulk seems kind of mediocre when you're looking at his card. Because Gamma Launch, I think, is ridiculously good. Range, like the 5 measuring stick is so big.
It is. It's massive.
And I like, there's a part of me that's like, this card would still be fantastic if it were range 4. And so there's a part of me that's just like, did someone while designing this game go, we don't use the range 5 stick enough? Let's not score. It's really, really good. And this is one where I wouldn't mind this card being toned down just a notch and maybe like bumping up Hulk just a little bit in a couple of places or something. But this feels like the card that makes Hulk, where Hulk is just okay as a character, but Gamma Launch is batshit awesome.
For the same reasons, I actually have this as an A instead of an S, mainly because now Hulk is just a, you know, you're spending 6 points and a tactics card to bring Hulk to Gamma Launch. Yes, Hulk can then go off and do Hulk things, whereas all of my other S tiers are cards that you can add no matter what your strategy is. Like, you can just throw them in there. It will work into whatever you're doing anyway. So, bring it. Whereas Gamma Launch, you know, if you find yourself playing Hulk quite a bit, bring Gamma Launch. You'll have a lot of fun. There are amazing shenanigans that you can do. Xavier Protocols, Jacob, Heart Emoji, Jacob, has done a bunch of articles on the Hulk and Gamma Launch and the weird shenanigans you can get up to with it. So, yes, I like it. I don't think it's an S tier. I think it's an A tier. I think it's an absolutely fantastic card, but I don't think it's one of those that's like, yeah, this is game defining.
Well, I envision this card with Hulk eating Hot Pockets when he throws around, because that's how spicy it is. He Gamma Launches someone and he eats his lava pocket and he's just like, Hot Pocket! Like, it's that spicy. All right, well, let's move on to the next card. Heave Ho.
Yeah! Heave Ho! Toss it in your fireplace, set it on fire, forget it exists, and move on.
Yeah.
This is another one I hate. I hate this card.
Yeah.
It is so bad. If
you throw a character, I would be on board with it. But since it's only terrain, even it's relatively low cost, but two allied characters within two, spending one each, just to throw a terrain for a little bit of extra damage. It's okay. And it's only size two or less, so it's like a 3 damage throw. Like, yeah. Let's move on. It's not good. I don't see it ever being good.
Yeah.
Let it throw a character.
Yes!
Okay.
Yes.
Inspiring Monologue. I think this is a perfect middle-of-the-road card. It's a C. It's a solid card. I use it in some teams. I don't use it in others. It's solid. I like that just about any character can end up using it. What do you think?
I have this one as an A.
As an A? Whoa.
Yes. I have this one as an A. Two main reasons. Reason number one, Thanos is on the card. Whenever Thanos is on the card, it should be at least a B or an A. Reason number two.
You are such Thanos' fluffer.
Cabal and Black Order, man. Those are my boys. As I'm seeing like the meta develop and evolve around this game, scenario play becomes more of a thing. And instead of just what I have been noticing is we're not just throwing attacks just to throw attacks and to be like, oh, if this happens, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, the attacks now become more laser focused. They now become more of a scalpel as opposed to a sledgehammer. Unless you're on, you know, like the straight, I'm just going to KO everyone. But so when you're playing against something that's a scalpel, being able to reroll your defense die to make sure that their attack that they need to go off doesn't go off is massive. This is one of the cards where you'll be like, bam, inspiring monologue, reroll, look, no damage, I win the game because I had enough control points. Like, this is going to be one of those cards. That's what inspiring monologue is going to do. Like, there's no range on it. Any character can pay the three. Like, there's almost no restrictions on this card.
I do like this. I've had teams where I specifically play Star-Lord with the gem so I can Inspiring Monologue on someone turn one for some really spicy, aggressive Jalapeno plays.
Yeah.
So I like it, but I find it very interesting that the Cabal player, who doesn't roll defense dice on his own characters, like, ever, is like, Inspiring Monologue, it's great! And me, being the character who's playing all defensive lists, I'm like, I use it some of the time.
Yeah. That's
a weird world that we
because...
were in. Yet you didn't like field dressing. This is a weird nope. world. All right.
Nope.
So let's do Lethal Protector.
Lethal Protector. Oh my god. I love this card. It is a teleport for Venom. Hey, he's kind of slow. He now gets to teleport more than range 3 because the character that's being targeted has to be with range 3, and then you teleport within range 1. So you can get a little extra hop as you go across the base. So it lets you get around a little bit of the slowness of Venom, gets Venom right up in their faces because he's now the target. And because he's now the target, he's now going to take the damage. And because he's now taking the damage, he's now going to turn around and we are Venom and so many snacks and heal the damage up. And your opponent's going to be like, well, what the hell did I just do that for? A, I love it.
Also an A for me. I just want to add in one thing that the card art, because it's Venom about to eat Nick Fury, I look at it and I imagine Samuel Jackson is just like, what are these motherfucking symbiotes doing on my motherfucking helicarrier?
Damn it, I'm going to do that every time now. I'm never going to be able to get that out of my head. Oh, that's awesome. I love You're it. Welcome.
Okay, Medpack. I'm giving this one also an A. I think this is going to be a staple of tactics cards. It's just a really solid 2-power, range 3, heal a character for up to 3 stamina. I think that's great. Like, it gives you a little extra range. It doesn't have quite the flexibility of patch up, but it's a little bit easier to pull off, not quite as cost intensive, and it's got better range. I like it. I'm giving it an A. I think it's going to see a lot of...
I like Medpack because it's either the character that played the card or a different character. Like, so you have a choice. Whereas patch up is other character, Medpack lets you pick. So, you know, having a character that's close to the edge of being dazed, pay 2 to heal 3, and get out of that danger range, I think is amazing. I really like it. I also have it as an A. I think it's absolutely solid. I think we're going to be seeing it a lot in a lot of rosters going forward.
Yeah, I think the biggest disadvantage is patch up can be played while neither character is activating, which is really right. good. But right. I think there's a very reasonable possibility we're going to see both.
Next one down the line is Mission Objective. Mission Objective I have as an S.
What?
Yes.
Have you been just like shoving jalapenos in your mouth and just be like, so spicy?
I 100% think Mission Objective is an S. Being able to retain your extracts, being able to hand off an extract from a less defensive character to a more defensive character, being able to manipulate your extract objectives itself, I think is absolutely amazing. This one is definitely S tier for me. I've had maybe 2 games where I did not bring this card.
I don't play this card very often. I was just kind of like, it's interesting, it's solid, I like it, C. I honestly don't end up playing against this card very often either. Interesting. Maybe I have to reevaluate this Nick Fury and Captain Marvel special.
Yes.
Dude, how much have you been eating at Chipotle lately? Like, have you just been like shoving the spicy burritos?
I do have like 9 different types of hot sauces in my house. I do like my stuff spicy.
This is makes sense. All right. Well, let's do one more for this episode and let's wrap up on Odin's Blessing. Obviously it is an Asgard affiliated card. But I'm giving it A. I think it's game defining for Asgard and my Asgard play strategies. Absolutely love this card. The only time I don't love it is when like the first attack does like 1 damage, and so they soften me just enough that the second attack spikes and dazes the character, and I don't get that opportune Odin's Blessing. But that's pretty rare. But I think it's solid. It's good. I love it. I take it. If you're playing Asgard, I don't see why you wouldn't take it.
Yeah, 100% agree. A, paying the three to basically negate an attack at one point. Like, I enjoy it. I love it. I think it's a great card. I think it's, if you're playing Asgard, you know, it's it may not be your first pick, but it's definitely going to be like your second or third pick.
Yep. Fair. All right. Well, I think this wraps up the first part one of our tactics card review. I don't even know what I'm calling this thing just yet.
Hot pockets to this point. We've had some pretty spicy takes so far.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say goodbye to you yet because we're just going to go right into another episode. So I'm just going to close this one out and be like, whenever you go to like discuss tactics cards and your co-host is just shoving jalapenos in their mouth and they're just like, man, these hot takes are OP.